You're listening to Grocery Journal.
Enjoy the show.
Hey, Abby, my man. Thank you so much for joining us today. We've just been trying to get a lay of the land in terms of the legal cannabis landscape here in Canada, which, of course, is an amazing thing, but not without certain areas that we could maybe look to improve. And one of the things we want to get a handle on is, how much money are the cannabis companies making? It seems like there's quite a few growers and companies that were operating really successfully in the legacy, the gray market spaces. And it seems like, they may be a little bit struggling in the current climate. Is there a reason for that you know of?
Yeah, absolutely. So it definitely is a little alarming for consumers to look at because they're so used to paying, in the gray markets when the mom sites existed, $35 an eighth, $10 a gram was the standard pricing. And now if you look to the legal channels, you're seeing eighths priced up to $65. And people are like, wow, these producers must be making a killing because they're selling it for twice as what we were selling it before. But it's not the case at all. However, the government has put in a pretty heavy excise regime that is pricing products way higher than they need to be. So for instance, in the British Columbia model, well, actually federally overall, $1 per gram is admitted to excise tax. So for instance, if you sold a 28 gram bag, 28 grams in there, you pay $28 in excise. So discussing over something that's easy to work for, say a $100 ounce, which is very popular now in the legal channel, you'll see it in many stores, BC Cannabis Store website, etc. Of that $100 ounce, there's going to be markup structures between the BCLDB, there'll be markup structures on the retailer, plus the excise. So for instance, a $100 ounce is most likely going to be sold to the BCLDB for about $56. Of that $56, $28 of those dollars need to go to excise tax. So almost 50% right away is sent to excise tax on top of that. So you can kind of see where all of those pricing structures kind of line up and where the money gets divided. So people freaking out and saying, wow, this micro producer is selling $50 eighths. That's ridiculous. They're making a killing. It's not the case at all. They're just trying to cover their bills, and the government is taking a large portion of it.
Wow. That sounds pretty crazy. So just going to dig into that a little bit. And the BCLDB, so that's British Columbia Liquor Distribution Branch. They're the overseers of cannabis in British Columbia, right?
Correct. Yeah. Same outfit that actually manages all the alcohol sales. So anyone that's familiar with how alcohol has worked in the province in BC, all product needs to run through the BCLDB. They warehouse it, they distribute it, they collect the invoicing and all the sales for it as well. And cannabis runs the same way. All cannabis products need to be sent to the British Columbia Liquor Distribution Branch, which is based in Richmond. And from there, it'll disperse out across the province.
And is the excise tax amount the same for alcohol as well then?
No, it's not. I'm not actually 100% sure what the actual alcohol tax is. I know there's a few different levels of it between like microbreweries and wineries and such like that, but it is definitely a lot cheaper. $1 per gram is a hefty bill to pay for excise, especially when you're selling 3.5 grams, for instance. $3.50 of that will be excise tax.
And so, out of that money, let's go back to that $100 ounce, for example, you're saying the grower, the licensee sells that to BCLDB, which are essentially a distributor, a wholesaler. They buy it at around, what you say, $56.50 to the BCLDB. The BCLDB put their margin on it and then list it for sale for the retail stores across Canada, of which there's private ones, privately run stores, and then there's the retail stores that are also run by the BCLDB. And so how much are they marking up from buying it from the grower and then selling it to the retail stores?
Sure. It's a definitely interesting question. I do want to touch bases very quickly on the differentiating between each province here and what is so unique about BC. So most other provinces have private retailers. Some provinces like Quebec have only government-run stores. BC has taken a hybrid approach of this. So they run their own e-commerce platform, the bccannabisstore.ca, and they also have the BC Cannabis Stores, which you've seen, very similar branding to the BC Liquor Stores. So they own those stores, they own the inventory going into it, and they run all the products through that way. Then they also sell that product to private retailers. So now BC is actually competing with their private retailers.
Yeah.
They're managing distribution, selling to their private retailers, but then also selling to their own government-owned stores. When they do that, they obviously have a set margin that the BC cannabis stores do, and they don't need to fall under the same requirements as private retailers do because, well, it's government funded. So BC, when they buy a product from a producer, they put on a standard 15% markup on every product that they buy. And that is just to cover the cost of the warehousing, the staff that do all the invoicing, the shipments, and everything else that goes on at the warehouse. It's a 15% flat fee. So let's go back to that $100 ounce, for instance. So you pay, as a consumer, $99.99 at your private retail store. The producer sold that ounce for $56.50 to the BCLDB. The BCLDB immediately puts on a 15% markup, which brings it to $64.98. That is what the private retailers pay and the BC Cannabis store themselves. They both pay that same price. So the 15% is not removed for BC Cannabis store. It's not removed for private retail. It's always there. Now we get to the actual final retail price that the consumer is going to pay. The BC Cannabis store has a set price of a 23% margin. So if we go back to that $56.50 plus the 15%, now we're at $64.98, and BC is going to put their 23% margin on it, which is going to give it an $84.99. Many people that have worked in retail know that a 23% margin or a 30% markup is kind of how that would math would work out. It's not really working for people that have private retail. You won't really cover your overhead of your staffing cars, your lighting, everything else that needs to be done. Some stores require security guards. You're not going to really be able to survive on a 23% margin. So most retailers need to do at least a 30 to 35 or even up to 40% margin to cover their lease and everything else, which then brings you to your $99 ounce. So $56.50 plus 15% gives us a $64.98 price. A 35% margin, which is really a base margin for a private retailer to make, would give you your $99 ounce. However, the BC Cannabis store around the corner, they don't have the same restrictions. They don't need to worry about the payments for lease and electricity and staffing because it's funded by the government. So they do a 23% margin, which comes to an $84.99 price point. So there's different margin structures between private retail and BC Cannabis store. Many private retailers are having to come down to this 23% margin because they need to compete. If there's a store, say a town like Courtney, for instance, on the island there, there's about seven private retail stores in there. And now there's a BC Cannabis store retailer as well. There's a private retailer about 500 meters away from this BC Cannabis store. So they need to kind of do that 23% margin because they're just going to lose sales. Customers will find out that they can go down to the BC Cannabis store and buy the exact same product for $15 cheaper.
Putting these stores into a pretty tough position, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, they can't do online sales either. It's quite difficult for them to differentiate when all of these things are riding against them.
And especially as a customer, you don't get like a proper explanation like we did from you right now and like how all this pricing comes together, because it's also a lot of insight for me as well. So that is when the bartender stands in the store, like me back in Vancouver, having to justify that we have like 60% margin because we have to pay rent for downtown Vancouver, so the store is super expensive and we have to survive somehow, and the customer gets super pissed just because it's cheaper in the BC Cannabis store, and you have to listen to, oh yeah, you're ripping people off and this and that. Then it's like, yeah, just puts not only the stores but even like the bartenders that are working on the ground floor in the store into an uncomfortable situation as well.
Absolutely. There's a lot more overhead for private retailers there is compared to a government-run store, with getting the licensing, putting up the money to outfit your building, hiring your staff, your especially downtown Vancouver, for instance, you 100% need to have a security guard. So that's another salary you have to have there as well. And just marketing fees of having your social media person to promote your store, any events you need to do. And again, electricity bills, heating bills, all those things add up a lot. So 23% margin on each of your products, you're not really going to cover that. Many retailers have found a way to do it, and they're really cutting efficiencies and doing the best thing they can, but it's very, very tough for them to survive on that low margin structure. So it's an interesting way that the BC province has handled cannabis legalization with this model. Like, they're the only province in all of Canada that's doing this hybrid approach. Like, Alberta doesn't have government-run stores. They have a government-run e-commerce platform, but all the retail stores, there's over 500 now, are all privately owned. they are obviously corporations and they're in big retail chains doing the same thing, but they're not funded by the government. They're running their own sort of things. And like Quebec, like I mentioned earlier, it's all government stores, a completely different model. So private retailers don't have a chance there. It's all strictly government. And difference of opinions of, say, what's better, but the hybrid approach of having a government-run store competing with a privately owned store where the government controls the sales and distribution of the product, a little bit odd, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially I find it also odd because the government and like the BCLDB at the same time has the monopole on deciding what products that actually come into the market and what products not. So that's also why we have to like fight for, and it's also hopefully soon becoming a thing that we will see direct sales as well again, because just imagine you're a private retailer and most of your customers want CBD. Yeah, sorry guys, there's literally two pure CBD flowers in this entire province. It's like if you have direct sales, you can even adjust this industry based on what the actual consumers want in the actual region and the actual storefront. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff to be still worked on, which is also interesting. As the German who came over here and thought, yeah, cannabis legalization, let's go, it's going to be awesome. And when it's actually legal and you're like, whoa, this is all looking a little bit highly regulated and capitalistic a little here.
And overly bureaucratic,
100%, yes.
Yeah. It's the difference between province, I think people may be surprised at from outside of Canada, the fact that it's so different. Like you've just detailed in how they run things with lots of government influence and very little or hybrid approach. But, you know, each province just thought, oh, I'm going to do it my own way. There won't be any joined up connectedness here.
Just your own thing. Interesting to talk about the provinces. There's even one little segment that I can add. I don't know if you guys noticed, but Saskatchewan actually, private retailers made a cooperative and they created the Saskatchewan Weed Pool, where the private retailers made their e-commerce as well to actually fight against the government in like the regulation of products and like selling the product to private retailers. So that is also quite cool. But in Saskatchewan, you can't just smoke outside in public. So it's really crazy how it's different from province to province here.
Yeah, Saskatchewan's a very interesting market too, because you can say that Saskatchewan was a fairly conservative province beforehand. They never really had gray market dispensaries. There's a few mom sites that existed and a couple that popped up here and there, but they didn't have a giant list of gray market dispensaries like we had in BC, even Alberta and Ontario. There was really none. Like I worked for a previous company and they were the first company to start a gray market dispensary in Saskatchewan, and it lasted a whole 48 hours. So the province of Saskatchewan was very, very strict on cannabis law pre-legalization. When legalization came in, they didn't really know how to handle it, it seems like. So they just let it open. There's no central distribution. They don't warehouse any of the products. It's all up to the retailers. So companies like the Weed Pool or National Cannabis Distribution or Open Fields, there's many distributions out there. But as an LP itself, I can work directly with retailers and send products direct from our licensed facility to a retailer's shop. And they can just sell it online. They can do whatever they want. You can work on pricing structures. You can even go as far as doing samples in Saskatchewan, because the government has taken a very hands-off approach there. And it's really quite interesting. So many people are kind of arguing about what the best model is to do here in legalization, if it's private retail, direct delivery, or if it's run through a distribution channel. And it's, you know, half a dozen of one, or however that saying goes. It's, you know, it's not, there's no better or worse, really, in my opinion, because I've worked with every province and every territory in this country so far. Saskatchewan's fantastic because you can really build a good rapport with your retailers out there, because you're not having the red tape of the government telling you how much you can sell your product for, or how much you can bring in, or what product you can bring in. You can just call up a retailer and say, hey man, I got this great 3.5 gram micro cultivated SKU. I want to sell it for this much. How much do you want? And they say, oh, I'll take this much, but if you sell me an extra 10 cases, I'll, you know, give me a 10% discount. Like, and you can have those conversations, kind of how many other industries work. If it's clothing or, you know, any kind of consumer good package market there. So it's an interesting approach. What Saskatchewan has done, they've done something called a provincial adjustment to kind of accumulate for the department that needs to track all of the invoicing and all the reporting. So in Saskatchewan, the excise is the same because it's a federally mandated excise tax of $1 per gram. Saskatchewan actually has something called a provincial adjustment where they put on a 6.45% on top of that $1 per gram as well. And that 6.45% covers the Saskatchewan's government's cannabis department, which really just keeps track of all the licenses, offers licenses to the retailers and the LPs, and does all the annual and quarterly reporting. So you pay a little bit more in Saskatchewan in a tax per thing, but you don't have to worry about provincial markup structures because you don't have to work through a central warehousing system, and you don't have to worry about red tape. You just put your products through.
Already that's a huge chunk of margin that's put back into the pot for, well, the best negotiator, I guess. So, you know, it's back to the people running it. So that sounds pretty interesting.
And what happened, like Tom mentioned, there's companies like the Weed Pool now that have started these distribution models so that they can make it easier for licensed producers. Instead of having to send one or two case packs every week, you can work with a distributor like the Weed Pool and take all of your products into a central warehouse and they distribute it for you. And each of these distributors have different models of how they make their money back as well. Some go as low as 5%, some go as high as 23%. So it depends on who you want to work with and what access they have to the stores. The Weed Pool has been much more for the people, and, you know, just kind of help out a small group of retailers that they work with closely while also having their own stores. So they have an interesting approach with it, and I've worked with both sides of the retailers and the distribution sides in Saskatchewan as well, and it's very different than the rest of the country, but it is a little more challenging with being, you know, the location of most of the micro cultivators being in BC and Saskatchewan being so far away, and, you know, having to send 12 units at a time because a lot of these retail stores have a small vault and only take so much product too. So that's always been a challenge. So each region, each province has its own challenge in its markup structure or distribution.
So can a BC grower send product direct to Saskatchewan?
If a BC grower has a sales license or is working with a processing facility to do their sales. So take Joint Ventures, for instance, who does the BC Black brand and Bud Coast and their new brand coming up, High Maintenance, and they actually distribute Pistol in Paris as well. They primarily focus on transitioning people from the legacy side into the recreational legal market. So they have a processing and a sales license. So if you're a small-time BC grower, you've grown cannabis and sold cannabis for years in British Columbia, and you want to transition over to the legal market, you can go and apply for something called a micro-cultivation license, which I'm sure people have heard about before. You can get that license over 6 to 8, 10 months, however long it takes, and depending on how much money you want to put into your facility and your growing techniques, that's kind of all up to you. Once you receive that license from Health Canada, you are now legally allowed to grow cannabis up to a certain amount of canopy space. You're not allowed to sell that cannabis direct to private retailers in Saskatchewan or to distribution boards like the BCLDB. So you work with a company like Joint Ventures to do the processing and the sales for you, so you can continue to focus on growing. So if you look at Joint Ventures' website, they'll still see a list of all of these legacy operators that have cultivated for decades, realistically, and now they're all kind of under one umbrella to get their craft micro-cultivated product to the legal channel in a very similar way that they used to. Obviously, there's the excise tax that needs to go into it, and the Health Canada standard packaging and childproof packaging and all these other things that happen, but the cannabis itself is the same way it was grown, the same techniques that were used for years, with a few other little standards that need to happen, obviously, for a regulated market.
Yeah, and that's with the micro growers, I think, like, the only problem that we're facing as well is just, like, the bureaucracy behind getting the micro grower license, and also the financials that you need to actually be getting that license as well. And from what I've heard for our micro growers, even if you've made it so far that you are part of the joint ventures and your product is finally in the container and it goes to the BCLDB, if the BCLDB doesn't sell much of it after a certain period, they basically send you all the product back, and then you just sit with your product and no one's gonna be selling it because it needs to go to the BCLDB, and the BCLDB is like, nope, not 20% THC, whatever, the consumers didn't give a shit about it, here you go. And then you're like, yeah, I guess I just wasted 50k or however much it costed you to produce all this cannabis, which is also crazy to me. But yeah,
there's been a lot of shattered dreams, unfortunately, for that exact scenario. A lot of people stopped operating in the illicit market or legacy market, whatever you'd like to call it, to have this dream of finally paying taxes and finally being on the books and finally being able to actually, you know, be a contributing member of society, paying away the things due that legalization promised. And they stop selling. They invest all their capital into their facility. Unfortunately, in the first year of legalization, there was a lot of consultants that were around that were steering people in the wrong direction and charging ridiculous fees that bankrupt tons of companies before they even got a product out of their facility. that was a sad kind of period for the first 12, 16 months realistically. But yeah, you can kind of go after this dream of being a, you know, tax paying citizen and continue your craft that you've done your entire life and get it through a processor, get it to market, get it into the retail store, and then it doesn't sell for whatever reason, because education is lacking in the legalized market right now. Marketing is lacking because you are restrained of what you can say and do with your products, and it cannot sell. And if it doesn't sell, the BCLDB has the right to send it back. Luckily, processors out there generally, you know, kind of prepare for this type of thing. So they have ideas of what products can and cannot sell. And if these awful situations do happen, your product comes back, there is other provinces that you can work with to move your product elsewhere. It doesn't happen very often. We've all kind of learned our lesson over the last 24 months realistically in this industry of what sells and what doesn't sell. So we kind of know if we're going to load a product into the BCLDB warehouse, we don't really go through that anymore. It has happened and it does still happen occasionally, but we've really aligned ourselves with the cultivating partners that we work with to make sure that they know what's going on. We know what's going on. We're producing the right products and just kind of get everything going that way. But also, you got to remember, only 3 years, 3 years of this brand new market. No one expected it to be perfect. I don't think anyone expected it to be like this, but 3 years, right? So yep. We'll see what happens in 3, 4, 5 more years. It's still new. We're all still learning. I'm learning as a producer. The government's learning as a distributor. The retailers are learning how to sell products and how to communicate with their consumers. We're all just learning. And it's unfortunate there's going to be some lives ruined and some people are going to be heartbroken and lose a lot of their, you know, property and things that they've invested in here. And a lot of money is going to be lost over this period as we learn. But it's just kind of the cost of doing this. You just, you know, it's a gamble, it's a risk, and it's tough. It's not easy. It's not the Wild West like it used to be, where you can just grow your product and call somebody up and move it. There's a lot of red tape to cross here, but we always keep our heads down and just work together. And instead of fighting each other, we'll be able to actually get this industry to the point where it needs to be.
Well, amen to that.
I think you just ended the call with that.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful words, man. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your insight. We learned a lot. Hopefully the audience picked up a couple bits too.
Yeah, hopefully for instance makes a little calculation sheet where you can see the numbers and minus and percent. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, if you want to go through some of the numbers, I can give it to you and stuff, and we can kind of break that down a little bit better and like let me know how that works. You're pretty good at the understanding of how the markup structures work, but if you want to run some numbers by me, I can put it in my calculation and show you what the actual excise
is. I think that would be really cool just to present it as a pie chart or a bud chart.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That's
Perfect, boys.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.